You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking around. Alan Jackson checks in with us. Looking in the winds. 907, joining us from Granbury, Texas, Mike Musselman. Gunner, what's up?
Man, I like that. I'm pretty impressed with your music selection lately. Right on point, man. Right on point.
Wow, who knew? That's never happened.
I know, that's a good song there, though, Alan Jackson.
Yeah, you know what? He's a good dude. Sing about small town America.
Yeah. Good song.
And I guess he's a good dude too. I don't, you know, you never, one never knows. But
he had some issues, man. He had some marital issues. They earned it out, but you know, he was, you know, it's just, hey, ups and downs in life, right?
There
some days
were
good. Some days were not so good.
It's you know what? It's the way of life, and
yeah,
if you can fight through it, then you have a chance to live a great life.
So. That's right. I mean, when life would be boring if you were perfect. Because you're just flatlined.
I mean, if it
no
was
downs,
there
no,
were no
really
there were no challenges in life. There was nothing to conquer. No adversity in life to would you set your jaw and got after it. Now most people hear that and they're like, well, I don't know, I could use a little perfection in my life. But I think look at
boring.
Look at Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. He didn't like it.
Oh. Nope, not for me. Are you home? It sounds like you're better.
Yeah, no, I got home.
Yeah,
I got home, flew home yesterday morning. But I went with my son and daughter-in-law, my grandson, to the Air and Space Museum out by the Smithsonian. Have you ever been there?
The one at Dulles or the one in downtown?
The one at Dulles.
That's cool as shit, man.
I walked in.
Oh man, that's cool.
I walked in and I thought it would be like the one downtown, and you know.
No.
Oh man.
Jaw drops to the floor, didn't it? Like, how did they get all this in this building?
What?
Yeah, and there's some cool shit in there.
And then you're walking around, and then you see the Enola Gay, and you're like, oh, look at that. So is that the replica B-29? They're like, no, that's it. Like complete.
That's the B-29.
Complete with the bomb site they used that day, and you're like. That's a piece of America. That's a piece of world history. So I like geeked out in that place, and I was going into my I could be here for like 15 hours walking around. Just he's in his own spot. Leave him alone. Leave him alone. And then you walk back, and two things: you see the size of the space shuttle.
Shit. Yeah.
You're like, whoa.
Everything in there.
And then those
Concord's in there, isn't it?
Yeah, the Concord's in there. And then the Gemini space capsule that they strapped to a rocket and said, all right, boys, who wants to be first? And I'm like, hey, Glenn looks like the kind of guy to go first to me. Glenn's like, yeah, I'll go first. Like, shit, man, look at that thing. And just like nothing. Your cell phone's got like 10 times the computing power that little piece of that little metal cone had when they like fired somebody up in that thing. Crazy.
What's cool about that is it's got like, you know, you start thinking about it's got a glamorous Glenn, you know, the first aircraft that broke the sound barrier is in there. World War One aircraft. It's just all the feats to aviation.
Oh man, and then
one place,
and some of them are one of a kind, and they're like from Germany and Japan. They're one of a kind aircraft that has survived, and they're here.
Yeah, isn't the old Air Force One in there too? That's the same place, right? Or no, that's not it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But
there's another place.
And there's
And Discovery's the one there, right?
Yes.
Is that place? Enterprise is downtown.
But you're standing next to that, and you're looking, and you can see all the tiles and everything. You just walk around there. I was like, I don't know what I expected. I think I expected what was downtown, which is great, but I walked in. I was like, I cannot even. This is crazy. So that was a ton of fun.
What was your favorite thing to see in there?
Probably just the Enola Gay, you know, and to know that sitting as I looked down into it, like that's the site that, you know, Paul Tibbetts flew that aircraft, right? And that's the site that the bombardier looked through, and all, like, we see it flying in those videos, like, that's the airplane. And so this guy who works there, you know, one of the guys or whoever, you know, people that volunteer and hang out there, you know, he was standing there and I said, so is this a replica? And he goes, that's it. He said, that's the original paint that when he painted his mom, that's Tibbetts' mom's name was Enola Gay. So he named his plane after his mom. He might've been a little bit of a dork, but, like, you could put all these, like, kind of racy pictures and stuff on your airplane, and he names his after his mom. Come on, man. Help us out. But I think that was – but the other thing was that Gemini capsule.
You know, how little those things are?
Yeah. And guys hopped in that thing and said, let's do this, man. I mean, I sent a picture to, you know, Ask Clown Central on Saturday when I saw it, and I said, this took a – you know, this was moderately ballsy, okay? And you see it, and it's like nothing. It's like trap. It's like taking like a Honda Civic, putting on a rocket, and saying, "Roll up the windows, boys." Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get a lot of that. That's pretty cool that you got to go there and see that stuff.
No, and it's like you, the Express. When did you go? It's been, I didn't know. I said, when did this thing open? He said,
oh, it's been there for a long time.
2003, I went.
I just went there by chance one day. You know, I think I got lost coming back. I was flying in. I picked up my car. I was coming home. It was like a weekend. The family was out of town anyway. They were going to California visiting. So I came back traveling, and then I saw it there, and I was like, oh, what the heck is this? I mean, it's a cool building. You know, it stands out.
Yeah.
And so I was like.
It stands out. And it's like, you know what? I was describing it for people, Mike, that anybody who lives on the West Coast that has seen the old hangars for the blimps, the airships that are at Tustin, it's along those lines, except bigger. Like imagine that, but bigger and pretty and newer and well done. And then it's a T-shaped with the space shuttle, on the backside in the long, you know, vertical axis of the T, not the horizontal axis. And you see that thing sitting there with the American flag in the background as you're walking towards it. And you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'll put the big pictures that I took.
And they got it broken down by like Cold War era stuff. And, you know, and it's just pretty cool. World War II.
Yeah, it was like, it was really cool. So I did that Saturday morning, and then I was pretty tired. And then they went to the store, and I fell asleep in the car. I was sleeping in the car. And then when we got back to their house late Saturday afternoon, my nephew, actually my cousin's son, but I call him my nephew, he's at OCS. So I got a chance to see him, and he's doing good. He's doing good, but, you know, fun to listen to. You know, stories about you know, trying to become a Marine officer. So, had a friend with him, and the kid was born and raised in Miami, and he went to college in North Dakota.
Nice.
We were like, what? Yep. I went, you know, it's a town near Fargo. And so my son John's with me, and he says, where? Mayville State University. John went to Mayville State and played football too. It was like, look, you guys are like the only two people in this state that went to that school. And so it was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. And then, you know, the other funny thing is, like, they eat, immediately fall asleep. Like,
right.
Like dead tired. Death tired. So that was cool. So it was a cool trip. It was a cool trip. And then I got to, I went up to Boulder Crest and met Ken. And it was night when Josh took me around, but saw that place. What a beautiful place they have up there. So yeah. That was cool. But driving in the back country at like late at night, you know, during
snow, it's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but you know what was in my head? Watch for deer. Watch for deer.
Oh, I thought it was like the hockey mask guy with the machete coming out.
No, I don't care about that guy, right?
Yeah.
But it's the deer going through my kid's windshield when it's not very warm. So.
See, what goes through my mind in those when I'm in those back streets like that in like Virginia or North Carolina is I don't want to get stopped by the toothless banjo players wearing just overalls with a straw hat. You know, then you're in some serious trouble there. I'd rather be caught by the damn hockey mask guy or freaking bear. I don't want to run into any of those backwoods guys.
Yeah, really? I would think that honestly, that kind of surprises me. I would think be completely...
Those guys scare me. I had a brief, you know, I was with a friend and we were in West Virginia and we were way out there and he was from that area. And even though they said that, you know, it was like, hey, don't worry. Man, we were in like, it was like coal country, you know?
Right.
To say that the town, you know, you're in a poor, those are poor, that's poor. You know, when you're talking about breaking down the echelons of poor, these guys make, you know, homeless people look like they got something going for them. I mean, yeah, they may have houses and stuff, but Jesus. I mean, it was poor.
Yeah, see, that's my thing about Louisiana. Rural Louisiana, where they don't speak the same language.
Yeah.
That kind of gives me do not stop, okay?
Well, they were speaking English. I just couldn't understand them either in West Virginia. But for their hills, they're, you know, they talk like that. I want to shut up. Why? You know, you're like, what?
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
And the first time, you know, you get like two. You get two like, what'd you say? And then they're kind of cool about it. You see it three times, yeah. They start getting annoyed.
Yeah.
Like, they start feeling like you're thinking that they're stupid.
You ain't from around here, are you, son?
Yeah, so don't, yeah, remember, you only get two, what did you say? Don't ask anymore. Just pretend.
Pretend like you know and give an answer.
Because if you start going down the road of, if you say that, I don't understand what you're saying, man, you're going to disappear.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an uncomfortable feeling when you're, when you're in that position, I mean, no kidding. When you're in that position and you're for real,
yeah,
for real.
It's weird.
A lot. I will tell you the other places that are like that scary, and I don't care if people like this or not. But if you ever stop on Indian reservations,
they know right away. I'm part of them. Those are my people.
I'm not. Yeah. Right. I'm not. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, you know, Indian reservations are serious places.
Well, you're not protected.
Yeah. And so to me, depending on, you know, you walk in and it takes about 2 seconds to understand if it's a friendly environment or not. It's not like from the initial look, you know. Like,
right.
Okay, I think I left my keys in my car. I'll be right back.
Take off.
Exactly.
See, not me. Those are my people.
Oh, really? Well, all right.
Next thing you know, we're smoking some wampa inside the teepee. we're sharing old stories. Yeah, those are my people. And they see it in you, too. So you can't fake it.
They do. And they know it. I mean, it's their home, and you're coming into their world. And so, but that's another place. Rural Louisiana.
Did I tell you the story of the turtle?
Let me just tell you, I don't get the same feeling. I don't get the same feeling when I'm in rural, like, northern tier. Like, when I'm in rural Minnesota, I don't get the same
feeling. No, I don't get the same feeling.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's very welcoming.
Well, here in Texas,
Texas, same way. I don't get that, but and maybe it's just me and seeing the movies. Maybe the people of Louisiana are exactly the same.
No, they'll eat you in Louisiana. Just some hot sauce and some rice. They'll eat you.
I like to ask people that. You're not going to eat us or anything, are you?
Yeah. Get that out of the way.
We're just going to chop you up.
There's an elephant in the room here.
Nobody.
We're just wondering.
Nobody's eating anything.
You're going to eat us.
That's funny.
And if they pause before they laugh, they're going to eat you. You know, because then they're like, shit, he knows. Ha. Hey, have I ever told you the turtle story?
Never.
With the Indian? The Indian turtle story?
I don't think so. It's not ringing a bell right now.
So when I was really little, in the Pueblo Nation, Hopis, they believe you are connected to an animal, right? Of some sort. Wolf, bear, raccoon, mouse, whatever it is. You are connected to that. And you don't get to determine that. That's a predestined fate. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, I didn't live on a tribe, but so
you didn't even know you were Native American until you took your saliva test, right?
No, I knew it. I mean, I was told by my grandpa and my grandmother when I was little.
I didn't know that.
So we're talking, and so I was really young. I was probably about maybe 10 or 8, and I was traveling with my dad, and we stopped at this place in northern New Mexico, Arizona, and there was a little trinket store. And I walked in there, and they had like these hand carved, like stone, little pieces of stone that were hand carved. And then they put a piece of leather through them, and they were necklaces.
Dang.
And so I picked this one up, and it was like a wolf, and it was howling, you know, it had its mouth open, and it was howling. And I was like, oh, this is cool, I'm gonna buy it. It's like 50 cents back then. So I was walking to the counter, and as I was walking to the counter, this old lady stopped me and said, you know, really in that thick accent of hers, she's like, you're not a wolf. And she took it from me. I was like, what the? So she was really cool about it. She walked back and she put it back and she picked up and she said, you're a sea turtle. And I said, what? So she gave me the sea turtle thing and she's like, no, you're a sea turtle. And I'm like, I don't want to be a sea turtle lady. You know, in my mind, I'm like, no. Sea turtles aren't known for their prowess, you know, kind of crazy personality. So I got it, and I lost it, big deal. So fast forward, I'm going through, and I was a young Marine, and I was traveling across the United States, and again, going down that road, there's Indian shops, you know, right off the freeway. So I had stopped at one of them and was walking around, and I saw like the same kind of setup. They had all this different, they were made out of wood though, and hand carved out of wood. And there was hundreds of animals, bears, wolves, you know, and you name it. So again, I'm looking at like these cool things like bears, and this lady comes by and she goes, you're not a bear, you're a sea turtle.
Again? Like,
yeah. This is like maybe 20 years separation. She goes, you're a sea turtle.
So now you're a grown man?
Yeah, I'm a Marine.
And they still tell you you're a sea turtle?
I'm like a Lance Corporal.
Did you have no military bearing?
You must have been. So she goes, and I finally am like, so I grabbed the sea turtle, and I still have it today. It hangs my truck. And so I grabbed it, and I walked up to the front. There's a young gal and then the older lady that just said that, and they're behind the counter. And I said, can you explain to me? I said, this may sound weird to you, but years and years ago, not at this place, but another place, same type of story, a lady told me I was a sea turtle. And the lady again, the old lady turns to me, she goes, you're a sea turtle. And I said, what does that mean? She goes, sea turtles, you're going to go on long, long voyages from your home. Long voyages. Some all the way around the world. But you're like a sea turtle, you're always going to come home. And I was thinking to myself, holy shit. All right. I'm a sea turtle, lady. I get it. And I did. So when you start, like, it was just crazy. Like, you know, all this stuff what I did. And I have, like, a sea turtle candle thing holder. I have a sea turtle thing hanging in my truck. Hey, I've connected with sea turtles, man. Because, like you said, the lady said, sea turtles, you know, they go on long voyages, but they always come home.
Are they
the place they were born.
Aren't they amphibious? Isn't a sea turtle amphibious?
Yeah, because it comes out on land, right?
Right. Lays its eggs.
I didn't think of that. She got that part right, too.
Shit.
But I could have been a frog. Or a salamander.
That's weird that they would both say that, isn't it? How cool
is
that?
Yeah, like, go on long voyages, but you're always going to come home.
Well, that's a good sign. Yeah, so it was kind of like, you will go on long voyages, but never come home.
Yeah, instead of saying you'll go on long voyages, but you'll never return, but that's not a sea turtle then. I guess, well, I don't know what it should be.
Could be a dead sea turtle.
Plankton.
Exactly, your food at that point. The, wow.
Yeah, so that's my sea turtle story, and that's why I had a sea turtle hanging in my truck.
What a cool story.
Yeah. Not, I don't know what kind of sea turtle I am, actually. Like, you know, I could be like a leatherneck, because there's a leatherneck sea turtle, right?
Is there? I don't know.
Leatherback.
I don't know very much about sea turtles, I'll be honest with you. I've seen them on shows that, you know, the Discovery Channel and things like that. Email. Did either one of you two go inside of any of the simulators there? Those are pretty incredible, too. I went inside one.
Yeah, I did. I went on one that was a carrier. I don't know if it was in D.C., the one in downtown, but I went on a carrier landing one. Easy. Don't let these guys tell you that landing on a carrier is difficult and stressful. Shit, I did it all the time.
I did it without any training. I grabbed that joystick and I smoked that thing.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, so they're called leatherneck sea turtles. There you go. Leatherneck. Mmm. I'm looking at one. They're huge, dude. Holy shit, they're big. Okay. But yeah, I went on a simulator. Simulators, so the aviation guys will always downplay simulators. Like, oh, they're not, that's not like flying. Then why do you guys do it for practice?
Yeah, why do we have so many of them? Why do we invest so much money?
Like I said, I went on a simulator in the V-22 down at Miramar because my buddy was actually running that whole simulation stuff with the C-130, the F-18. And we took that V-22 out, very little instruction, lifted off, flew underneath the Coronado Bay Bridge and landed at Jack Murphy Stadium.
Yeah, like that was really hard.
First day.
Yeah, hello.
That was my first day flying a V-22.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how hard can it be?
Eat it.
Yeah.
Straight up eat it, boys and girls. It ain't hard. We go to simulators, then we go do the real thing.
Right. All right. And then, so me and the aide doing the simulators because General Nicholson was in a meeting with the wing CG. And so when he came out, we had been in there like 2 hours flying. And so he came out, we were ready to go, and we're in the car, and he goes, hey, I'm sorry, guys, you know, we took so long. You guys probably had been bored out of your minds, me and the eight. And I turned back, because I was in the front seat, and I turned back and said, General, that was the best meeting ever. He's like, what'd you guys do, Gunner? I said, we were flying V-22s in the simulator. He's like, I've never done that. So he was upset with us that we got to play.
And he didn't.
And he did.
Yeah, that's what generals do, though. They don't get to play. They get to go to boring meetings.
Boring meetings and do boring stuff where the aide and the gunner are playing like little kids in a simulator.
Yeah, exactly. It's what, everybody's got a role, right? You want to be a general? You got to go do boring shit.
Boring stuff.
Yeah, that's.
Should have been a gunner. You get to do fun stuff.
That's the way it is. The gunner, the e-ticket to Disneyland. Don't go anywhere without it.
No, that's true.
It is
that true. That being the gunner working for General Nicholson got me in a lot of fun places.
Well, you get to go. I mean, if you're a gunner and you have a kind of a little bit of an adventurous spirit and you want to get out and see things. I mean, come on, Mike, there is no better job, right?
Oh, yeah, no. Nope.
Yeah, it's
now, the one thing the general would never let me do was fly the plane while he was on it.
Yeah.
Because the pilots would ask, you know, hey, Gunner, you want to fly? Yeah. No.
Yeah, that ain't happening. Look, you may not be able to get the controls back in time after he screws it up and I'm playing. My name is not going to be in that article, okay?
Right. Well, you wouldn't believe what just happened. Yeah, that one of those things.
Yeah, on a simple, you know, five-minute flight.
You say it. You know, recreational flight activities. When you don't have to fly, don't fly.
Optional aviation events, do not do them. And, I mean, for very good reason. I mean, people get killed. And if you get killed doing a ride-along on that, come on, man. Is that what you want to lose your life? I mean, yesterday, a plane took off from Fullerton and crashed into a house that was having a Super Bowl party.
Were they Ram fans or Patriot fans?
I don't know, but like in the plane, everybody in the plane killed, and then two couples killed in the house that were having a party. I mean, it doesn't, and you know what? What's amazing? I was thinking about this. You know how many people move around the world every day in aviation? I mean, the number's astounding. And even in third-world countries.
Still the safest way to travel.
You rarely see mishaps, even in third-world countries, which is crazy. You know? That's how safe aviation is now.
Yeah, it's the safest way to get around.
To get around. And there's millions of flights around the world a day, and they just... I mean, that's how safe it is, which is, if you give it some thought, it's like, and again, even in third world countries, it's that kind of safe. And it's wild. The, Mac, you've not mentioned the Super Bowl today.
No, let's don't talk about it. That was the most pathetic thing I've ever wasted my time on.
I got home yesterday, and Patrick and I went and got something to eat, and then I came back and I sat down and started writing some stuff that I had written. I'd written probably for 4 to 5 hours of the flight, stuff that I had in my head and whatnot. Then I started writing and came to other stuff, but so I transcribed that onto my computer, and then I went out and I fell asleep. I didn't see the Super Bowl.
Lucky guy.
So, you know, I heard, you know, I saw obviously that New England won. But you know what, how about that guy, Tom Brady, man? Greatest of all time.
Yeah, now
No discussion. So yeah. So anyway. But it wasn't like the game that people thought. I saw predictions before the game like 38-34, the Rams, 31-28. New England, you know, and it was not so many, you know, the Rams.
Well, see, the ones I saw were like, it was huge, like going to be, you know, Patriots over the Rams by like 20, 30 points.
Right. I didn't have a chance to pay that much attention, because my life has like taken the craziest turns in the world last like month. And which are all, like, I would not trade my life right now for anybody else's life because of the things that, you know, Mike and I and Josh have done together, and that as that begins to percolate and more leaders have seen it, it's just phenomenal. I met with General Mullen on Friday, and he was like, you know.
Oh, Mullen. I haven't seen him in a long time.
I didn't think that he had, I didn't think he was there. I don't know why, but I thought the way when his aide called me that, that I didn't think he was there. And so I showed up to talk to him, and he was like, hey, just so you know, I'm all in. I was blown away. Never seen anything like that before. And so it's having that experience, but all the time. And so now beginning to kind of plan how, you know, the Marine Corps wants to do this. So how do we do it? So starting to plan that, which is interesting. And you know, really humbling, honestly, really humbling. Because right. Got a chance to, as Mike was saying, I can't remember what Mike said to me, but you know, this is, you know, this is so cool, you know, and again, we've done all kinds of stuff together in our lives.
This is pretty overwhelming. We've done a lot of things in our life, and it's just.
Yeah, and not only hearing that from us, but Dave Furness saying, this is crazy cool. And I went out and I did it at the basic school the other day, and then I told you about that, but you know, starting to get emails from those captains, hey, you know, first of all, thank you, you know, and hey, could I talk to you about this? And just as one of the things we talk about is, you know, the kind of the 1,000 points of life effect that, you know, you kind of put it out there and you say, hey, think about this stuff, give us your thoughts, and then take it and then run with it. This doesn't come in a container. Open it and spread it around and mess with it and let us know how you make it better, because, you know, the creative mental energy of people is really cool. And so, and so it's happening every day. It's happening every day. So anyway, that's.
Which, speaking of which, I do have some contract examples to share with you.
Nice.
After this.
Nice.
They're simpler than I thought they were going to be. That's what it is.
All right. So what did you got home, and you do anything exciting, or what have you been doing?
Oh, great, man. I mean, it's been a whirlwind weekend too. So, talking talking to people, had a great, took our friends, Jared and his wife, to church with us, and their kids, they had a great time. Then we talked to some, I talked to some of the ladies, and then I met another lady that, blew my mind. And we're going to talk to her here in the future. She's been pretty busy. She's very similar, but what she's doing is, what she's doing it is an outreach. She works with the prisons here in Texas, helping people, counseling people. Dad died in prison. Mom died in prison. Brother is in prison and, you know, serving six life terms. She was in prison for a little bit for drug something and then got her life together. She finally broke out of that. And now she's taking all of that as fuel and she's going around all around the state of Texas, talking to people, helping people, giving people, you know, hey, this is how you can get out of it. Look, you know, here, look at me. So it was really great to listen to her, talk to her. We're going to get together some more and talk some more, you know, cause she does this similar. And crazy thing is no formal training, nothing. She figured this out on her own. Because when we were talking and I started explaining to her what you and I would do and what we did, you know, how we, some of the things I was telling her, the wording I was using, she's like, oh my God, that's fantastic. Can I use that? And I said, yeah. I mean, we didn't come up with it. It was just someone else's. And so when we're talking about stuff and sharing stuff and then, you know, and I asked her, you know, have you seen Elizabeth Smart? She goes, no. She goes, I know who she is. And I said, oh, you got to watch her though. This is right in line. I mean, so it was really interesting to see someone that and figure this out by themselves, but it's a different twist to what they do,
right.
And different sets of traumas. I mean, I can't imagine being raised like that. I mean, boy, her and her brother, unspeakable as a child. I think she lost her parents. They were finally both in prison when she was like a teenager, became homeless. Her brother, older brother, went into prison early and then got six life sentences. You don't get that from, you know, minor petty stuff.
Yeah, jaywalking. You're probably not going to get
that. Yeah, dad was serving life. Mom was serving lives. And then, you know, and she still stays in touch with her brother. Her brother still doesn't take responsibility, very angry with everything. You know, but she hasn't given up on him. Her parents, she kind of gave up on because every time she'd go and figure that out. But she was in the same thing when she was blaming the world. She was blaming her upbringing on all her bad decisions, men, drugs, alcohol, until one day, bam, you know, she decided, I think she just, as she said it, I made a realization, if I don't change, I'm going to die. And I don't want to die. Not yet. Not like this. And bam. I mean, completely different. But just an amazing person to talk to. Really, just wow. Really informative. And then our friend up in New York, going to get him on. Once we get some time, I will talk to you about that. And then either we could do him on live together, all three of us. Then just talk, or you can do an interview. It's up to you.
Yeah, I don't care. Whatever you think would be best.
You know, he's a professional. He's been doing this for quite some time, so he can talk on the radio. But he, you know, he's got a really great story to tell himself that, again, you know, had every – he could have checked out on life because everybody would have played the sympathy card and, oh, pity, oh, you poor thing, you know. Oh, you just sit right there. You don't have to do anything because you paid your dues. And he decided not, you know, that's not for rain. Boom, look at him now. Still kicking along. So we're going to get him on. And he's just a funny guy. He's kind of like Josh, but he's not Jewish, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's an indoor, you know, he's a silver spoon, right. You know. So when he came in the Marine Corps, or he's with us in the Marine Corps, it was a very uphill learning curve for him.
Yeah,
so
culturally.
Yeah, but he gets it. you know, and he really does. He does get it. He loves, you know, he loves hanging around. He likes the that kind of lifestyle.
You know, the I think it's really interesting. One of the fun things in the Marine Corps is to watch that kind of cross-pollinization. You see rich guys, kids could come in from wealthy backgrounds, right? And, you know, they're going to be a rebel or something. And then they meet the world. And you see them change as people. And it's really cool that, the you know, when you live with people like you do in the military, it's pretty interesting event. And you get, you know, for instance, I mean, I tell a story and Mike, you know, Mike and I laugh about it where, you know, the Hispanic Marine from Guatemala, you know, is yelling at us. Yeah. We're not all Mexicans, you dumb assholes.
Yeah.
And then everybody's laughing. He's from Puerto Rico. I'm from Guatemala. He's from Honduras. He's Mexican. He's Spanish. It's all different. It's like France, Spain, Germany. You guys aren't the same. You're different. We're different. We're like, oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Right? And you're laughing. And then
My bad.
Right, exactly. I didn't know that. And then the other one is, you know, as a rule, in the inner city, right, the black community and the Hispanic community does not get along. And as a white person, you're like, what? Like, I didn't know that. Like, yeah, you guys are so self-absorbed, you don't even pay attention to us. That's how little you know, because we don't like each other. And then they start talking about that, and you're like, holy shit, man! Like, there's all this stuff going on. I don't know anything about. And so, really interesting the class of culture in the Marine Corps. That's where I got, honestly. That's where I got my education about domestic violence.
Right.
When I was on the Ranger, probably out of the 18 NCOs, corporals and sergeants, we had 15 of them were black, just by coincidence. And let me tell you, when you go there, when you get sent their PCS there. You're a pretty squared away Marine, the PRP stuff and all that stuff. And I had good, they were good Marines, but I remember them sitting around talking about their mothers getting quote unquote tightened up by their father, house being messy, dinner being late, dinner being burned, you know, he come home late and drunk, and you sat there and you listen, you're like, wow. And just the behavior of cops in their community, as opposed to the way I looked at cops. Yeah. When they got lost, they weren't looking to find a police officer to take them home. Okay. That's not how they did it. And again, it's just such an interesting, you know, I guess cultural education for everybody. So pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And then, actually I got to call my cop buddy. He just reminded me, get together and talk about kind of where we're going to go with this. So.
Great. What, so when SHOT Show going on, big stuff. What about the land nav event? Are we done with that? Are we on to the next event or what?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about what we were talking about here. We kind of gave them a little bit of an inside look of kind of what we talk about and how we go about. And it was pretty neat to watch their reaction to. Because there's a gal that I've been teaching, and she's had some issues in her past, and she's been wanting to write a book. She's almost done, but she's been sitting on it about her experiences and how it changed her life. And so we've talked about this a long time ago, you know, that she needs to complete this. This is part of that whole healing process, the journey. She's got to do this. Because, you know, and then I guilt tripped her this weekend. She was like, God, why did you say that? And I said, you know, we were talking, and I said, had you finished this book 2 years ago like you wanted to, think of all the lives that you would have changed to other people that you could have probably saved. She's like, don't say that. And I said, well, that's true. She's like, don't say that. And I asked her, I said, why are you so hesitant to write it? She goes, like, well, because she is a writer. She's a professional writer, and she doesn't want to be judged in the open world on her writing. She doesn't want to be people come back and go, oh, this is poorly written. Cause you know, like I said, we talked to that. And it's like, why does it matter?
Here's why I'll tell you why it matters. Cause it's you. I'm not writing about like the space shuttle where people say, oh, you know, that's bullshit. When you write about you, you open you up to get tattooed. And so I understand that. I mean, who wants to be, ridiculed by, you know, by the public, right? With all the shitty ways that the public can do that. Who wants that? I mean, especially when you're talking about you. Like, if I was writing about you, I don't care what they say. Right? Like, I'll write your biography, and then people can have at it. Right?
Right.
But
you're writing about yourself. Yeah, okay, I see that. But you still got to get through that. Because your message is more important.
You have to come to that. That this is an important message that I get out there. And, you know, whatever slings and arrows come with it, you know, I'll take. Because you know what? And this is our experience here in the last, you know, month. Well, longer than that, you know. When you begin to touch lives and change them, like when you get an email or a text message from Libby, Luke's mom, saying that at the reception, when it came time for Luke and I to dance, we danced to My House, which is the theme of All Marine Radio. How do you keep your jaw from quivering when you read something like that, that you've touched somebody's life so deeply that now Luke is helping other people and this is how they celebrate it?
Yeah.
And that's what they have to know. Honestly, that's why I had Peggy come on, because for 22 years she hadn't talked about it. And I knew she had only coexisted. And I wanted her to feel the winning feeling that you feel when you tell your stories and your story touches other people's lives. And so, but you have to come to that by yourself, and it is scary and stuff like that. So anyway, but that's cool.
Interesting. Yeah, that is cool.
Email. First of all, sometimes it sucks when you guys are on the road and you can't do your thing. I want to say I felt left out last week. I was really excited to hear what had happened, but hearing about it today, is pretty cool. Question, how did your thing go at the General Officers Symposium? Mike, your thoughts.
I did a lot of things in my career that I'm pretty proud of. I look back at and I'm like, so I was talking to a friend of ours. There were opportunities where I got to leave my thumbprint on the Marine Corps, meaning there were things that I did, things that I worked on that will be forever in the Marine Corps. And I was pretty proud of that. I mean, you don't get the opportunity to do that, you know. You fuck the whole Marine Corps. That moment with the GOS was probably the most, if not the most important thing I ever did in my entire life. The feedback we got, people talking to us saying, hey, and you see the potential. That's the crazy thing about it. You see the potential. And, you know, when we were talking through that and the excitement and everything else that was there, it was pretty incredible. I mean, it's hard to put it in words. It would just say it was probably the most memorable day that I could say that I've ever experienced in my life.
It's almost like Mike and I and Josh, you know, we've kind of peered into a valley that they don't see. And to look at them and say, hey, I'm standing here telling you, you know, without one bit of bullshit, that number is going to go down. Now, and these guys are so frustrated, and women are so frustrated with the programs that they put, and that none of it's working. You know, the number, again, more money spent, more suicide. And I think that they saw the path and said, wow, we can do this. And I think that just that, and I'm talking about, I mean, guys we've known for a long time. And John Broadmeadow is Lieutenant General now. He comes up to me afterwards and says, I'm so proud of you and what you guys are doing. He goes, Mac, he said, holy shit, I've never seen anything like that. And you're right, we can do this. I can't, you know what I mean? It's like, we don't get geeked like that as a group, right? And to see three and four star generals, you know, coming up to you and wanting to get engaged and talk about that is so, I mean, I agree with Mike. it was beyond cool. And it was really, I mean, Dave Furness, Major General Furness, he got up and introduced it. And he, right, I mean, he when he introduced it at Camp Lejeune, you know, his, you know, he sees the picture of his daughter and his voice cracks. And, you know, and the same thing happened on Wednesday. His voice cracked. And he doesn't do it for effect. He does it because he feels it. And but it's powerful when it happens, you know, when whether one of us has to stop talking or whatnot. That's powerful when people see it and they feel it. And I know Jerry Mullen told me a story about his personal life, about something that happened to him when he was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And he said, this thing needs to come to Quantico. I have people scattered all over. We're dealing with this stuff just like everybody else. But we don't have the same support kind of structure that everybody else has that works in units, because we have so many different, you know, cats and dogs and strays and things like that. And he said, I had a great conversation with him. Continuing to be overwhelming but heartened because people see it. Questions, would young Marines get it? Would young Marines buy it? Answer, they already bought it. It's done. It's in their pocket. They bought it. They walked out the store with it. You know, would senior officers, would they see it? And would they buy it? Answer, they bought it.
Oh, they're immersed in it.
Yeah, Commandant stood up, and that's the first question. But
some of them are geeking over it, Tom.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you can imagine their role as leaders of the Marine Corps.
Oh, yeah.
And so frustrated that we can't see how this gets better, because it just keeps getting worse in spite of all the programs. And again, the cool part of the whole thing is it's wrapped in our culture. It's wrapped in our history. It's very Marine-like, and so it's cool. Yeah, it was cool, and I hung out. Mike had to catch a flight. He went up to D.C. To 8th and I think, and then he had to catch a flight. But I hung out for the rest of the day and then had dinner with General Furness that night, and so got a chance to talk to more people as the day went on, and listen to their impressions, and they were all good. If there's people that think it bullshit, nobody walked up to me and has said that. Nobody's emailed that to me. And the more junior officers I get, for instance, I got email all weekend from the captains out at the basic school about it. And so, and even a whole bunch this morning. And so, again, it's fun. And then the other thing it does is it doesn't seek to say, okay, this is the way it's done. It's like, okay, here's this. Take it and run with us with it and let us know what you think. So you're trying to unleash ultimately their creativity into it to get after this problem and animate them so that we can animate the 98% of the Marine Corps against the 2% that's struggling. And if you can do that, that's how the number goes down. 98% against 2. Let's go get them, boys and girls. So pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
What's the best thing that you ate while you were traveling? Mike, did you have a chance to eat? Mike didn't eat.
What, just now? Like when we did to D.C.?
Yeah, you weren't there very long. So what's the...
Oh, it was at the airport at Reagan.
What'd you have?
I had one of those bowls. It was a King Kung Pao chicken with the bao. You know, like a dumpling, a bao dumpling. B-A-O. Thailand.
Yes.
It was pretty good.
Was it?
Yeah. For airport food? Yeah, I was pretty impressed.
We went out Wednesday night. Dave and I went out for dinner, and... it was cold and at night, and the wind was blowing. So we walked in the parking lot into like this area up by Potomac Mills, which is north. But it's kind of like they tried to make a mini Times Square, a lot of, you know, video boards and things like that. But it was cold. With the wind blowing, it was cold. And I said, we're going to the first restaurant that we walked near.
Oh, no.
And so, no. We walked into P.F. Chang's.
Oh,
and,
that's a good place.
Yeah.
I know where you're at now.
Well, we had chili and sea bass.
Yeah, that's a good place. I know exactly where you're at by up there by P.F. Chang's.
And chili and sea bass.
There's a lot of restaurants up there.
Yeah, it's good to go. I'd never been to that area. But, dinner was awesome. So the best thing I had was a Chilean sea bass. And then my daughter-in-law is a great cook. She's like a legitimately creative foodie person and takes stuff that you would say, oh, that? And you say, oh, my God. So
right up where you were at, if you continue to go straight, and then there's a strip mall past, like, I think there's a Best Buy on your right-hand side. Keep going.
Yes.
And then straight in front of that, there's a small little strip mall. And I don't know if it's still there, but there's some Indian food in there that is the best. Oh, like the best curry dishes, tiki marsala. You know, I love that stuff. Oh, it's so good.
Really, I don't eat that much. I'll go to and eat Indian food, but I wouldn't go there by myself. So you would have to take me there.
Yeah, dude, it is so good. All their food. Oh, good.
But let me just tell you this: Chilean sea bass.
Yeah,
I would eat any time.
Chilean.
Yeah, Chilean. I would eat anywhere because I'll tell you what, I have had that. And it's I don't know that I've ever had bad Chilean sea bass. Oh my God, this was amazing. And so they had a little Asian, had a little Asian kick to it with the sauce that they had at PF Chang. So yeah, I was pretty fired up. And he ordered some kind of dumplings too. There was a seafood dumpling and then some kind of beef dumpling before as an hors d'oeuvre. So it was a
Yeah, Kip Chang's a good restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've always had good meals. I'm sure people will say, oh, you know, I've been there, blah, blah, blah. But every time I've been there, I ain't good. All right, what else is going on this week?
This week, I'm going to be making a barn door, sliding barn door project.
Really? For who?
For me, for the house. No, for you. Who do you think wants a barn door, a sliding barn door?
Well, in order to have a barn door, normally you have a barn. You don't have a barn.
No. So I don't know if you remember when you were here, like in the laundry room, when you first come in, you know, where the refrigerator is and the laundry room and the sink in there.
Yes.
Okay. There's that door that goes into our bedroom, our master bedroom, our master closet.
Yes.
So that is kind of tight and cramped all the time when you're opening it up and you got to do laundry or something. So I'm going to remove that door and make a sliding door behind the door that opens up into there. A barn door.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds
it's
simple.
It's not exactly on a barn. It's a barn door motif.
Yeah, it's not a barn door. Like, no, it's the it's the new thing, sliding barn doors in your house to save that opening space.
Ah, so it doesn't open. I got it.
Yeah, it'll slide behind the other door that opens up.
Interesting.
So, I got to do that. So I've jumped into that project, and that's going to be, that is going to be a project.
How long do you think it'll take you to do? And what are you building it from? Are you building it from scratch, or are you buying the door and hanging it?
No, scratch.
Got it.
I can't find anything that I would really like, so it's got to be scratch.
Whoa.
Right. So I'm going to go, like, you've seen our floors, right? They're that distressed mahogany dark.
Right.
So I'm going to go with distressed wood. And then it's not going to be perfectly sanded. It's going to have some distress marks. I'm going to do a dark stain on it so it'll match the wood floors. And then do a black rail above where the casters will roll on and, and then do probably a header up there too, with the same kind of wood, so it all blends together.
Mr. Mike makes stuff. All right, man. Anything else exciting going on today?
Today?
Yes.
No. Going to a concert this weekend.
Oh, really? Who?
Max Stallings.
Bob Willis and the Texas Playboys. Are they touring again? I didn't know.
Hey, don't make fun of Bob. Bob is no longer with us.
Oh, I certainly would never make fun of him had I known that.
Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys.
Yeah.
The king of Texas Swing.
Texas Swing. You know we love Texas Swing, everybody.
Yeah. So, and so here's the kicker. You know, Bob Wills,
yeah.
He's the guy, if you listen to Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys songs, Bob Wills is the guy that's in the background doing that, "Ee-haw, go get 'em, boys." That's Bob Wills.
He's
Tommy Duncan and all the other guys. They're the really good musician. But Bob Wills is the guy that, like, yeah, and here's Tommy Duncan. Yeah, I love it. And then old Buck. We got to get Buck because Buck is doing some stuff with leather that will make your head spin.
Really? He always does, though, man.
You better calm down, though, because he's getting really good. And with really good comes fame and fortune. So
he's going to be famous and fortunate?
Well, he's fortunate already that he knows us.
Wow. Well, good for Brock. That's good. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's doing some crazy stuff.
Hold on, one more question, I'll let you go.
Right.
The governor of Virginia is in hot water over those pictures. Should he resign?
No, he should.
I say he should.
Why?
Because everywhere he goes now, those things are going to... My instinct would be to tell him, no, don't resign, fight this out. But there's some things that are a little bit beyond the pale, right?
And you need to stop this, though.
In that, I agree, but that's not the one you're stopping on. That is beyond the pale. I can't save you from that one. You know, I can't defend.
No, I get what you're
saying. Even in when did he? What year did he do it?
This was 84, 85, or something like that.
84, 85. Yeah, that's a little bit late in the on the calendar. In any way, shape, or form, not funny. You know, you thought that was funny, then I you could say, no, I'm not going to quit, but everywhere you go, this is going to be an issue. It's not like, you know, like you had a bunch of tickets, you know, or you didn't pay your taxes 1 year and now you're going to write a check and pay them. It's not like that. You know, it's like serious lapse of judgment in a racist kind of way, which I can't save you from.
But you agree with me. We got to stop this nonsense.
Yes. I mean, look, it is
what it is, man. Okay.
People going back and taking somebody's tweets when they were 14 that just won the Heisman Trophy and saying, you know, he's a homophobe and all the rest of the stuff. But to me, that's easily you deal with that. Like, hey, look, I said some stuff when I was 14 on my Twitter account that I apologize for. And I'm sorry if I hurt anybody's feelings. And then you move on. I agree with you. But there's some stuff that I don't think belongs in that category. And, like, hey, I know it's a harsh price to pay for that. But in the 80s, now, if you told me that that happened in the 40s, or I'd even say even the 50s, like, yeah, that was stupid. But you know what? That was our country.
Yeah.
But it wasn't our country in the 80s, I can tell you that. And if you were still doing it, you're stupid. And if you're stupid enough to be photographed doing that stupid stuff, then you get what you get. But I agree with you, Mike. I agree with the sentiment. It's
right. And I say that he's a Democrat. And I normally wouldn't say that, but, you know.
Doesn't matter.
We did stuff. I got it. But we got to get past this. We do. Names shouldn't hurt. You know, it's like, God. Yeah, just.
But they do. Look, I agree with you. But some of that stuff. And this is not a good example to use for, in my opinion, it's not a good example for you to make the argument because it's so far to the side of the bell curve. How many of us have those pictures, like, in some yearbook? None of us do. Okay? None of us do.
Right.
So, I agree with the sentiment, though. Like, anything you ever said in your life, like, disqualifies you. So who's going to run? And look, the people that are, most people are like sitting there shaking their boots saying, God, I hope they never find that. I hope they never find that. But again, you know the way you live your life. If you lived it bad and then changed it, you better get it all out there and you better apologize for it. Or you can do what that, who was that lady, who's on TV? They dug up her stuff and she said, my account got hacked. Yeah, it did. It got
hacked. Sure it did.
I was hacked. Photoshop. That's not me. Everybody says it's you. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Photoshop. Candy Graham. Yeah. Photoshop. Anyway. All right, man. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Talk to you later.
See you. You have it. The one and only Michael Musselman here in the third hour of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Let me tell you about what's going to happen tomorrow. We're going to have Alex Hollings, who is supposed to join us today, but because his mother's trying to move down to where he lives, he was tied up. So I asked Grant if he would mind flip-flopping coming on Monday instead of Tuesday. And he said, of course not. It's been a while since I've been off. And so you'll hear about that. And so you'll hear about my trip to the National Space Museum, whatever it was, at the Smithsonian, D.C. Pretty geeky about that. I'll tell you this, though. Look at the pictures I put up from my phone. They're crazy good. They're big pictures, too. So, yeah. So I'm going to put them up on the... I'll put them up on the website. Check them out. Picture of the Gemini capsule, the Enola Gay, and the space shuttle. You'll enjoy that. And then Grant comes on, and with Grant we talked about joint patrols in the South China Sea, why that took so long. We talked about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, our withdrawal from that, got his thoughts about that. We talked about who our trade war is hurting more, the Chinese or us. And why did it take so long for us to stand up to the Chinese? Was it just that it would unsettle the political landscape and nobody needs that? I need to be able to sell that I get along with China and that your toilet paper costs 45 cents less, blah, 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 blah. That's how I'm going to get reelected. So then, after that, Gunner comes on. So, don't touch that dial. Have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio is over and we're out.